News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. John Lynch's 8 consecutive years in New Hampshire's corner office is unprecedented in modern times. And many say his success is due to the fact that he never seemed to bring his own politics to the job. We sat down with Governor Lynch yesterday to look back at his time in office, and one theme that came up repeatedly was this determination to be a bipartisan leader right from his first campaign in 2004.
I've always been somebody who didn't care whether a representative or senator was a Republican or a Democrat. I just want to work together with people to solve problems. And I think people understand that that's the way I was back then, and I continue to be that way today.
But some say this bipartisan commitment came at a cost, that Lynch didn't stick his neck out and lead on important issues, from gay marriage to gambling. And despite his popularity, there were times when Lynch made some very unpopular moves. For example, several of his revenue-raising ideas backfired, such as the ill-fated LLC tax and his attempt to pull money from a state medical malpractice fund. Today in The Exchange, the Lynch legacy. Let's hear from you. How do you think Governor Lynch has shaped our state? How do you think he'll be remembered? What are your disappointments with the governor, and what do you see as his biggest achievements? The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, keep them short, exchange@nhpr.org is the address, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have 3 guests for the hour. With us in studio is Josh Rogers, Statehouse reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Josh, thanks for taking the time out for us today.
No problem, Laura.
Also with us, Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, lead writer for thelobbynh.com. Kevin, good to see you.
Great to be back, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thanks as always.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
Well, and Josh, let's go to you first. Going back to 2004, Democrats were casting about looking for somebody to run against incumbent Craig Benson. As I remember, John Lynch wasn't exactly a household name back then, Josh.
No, he wasn't. He was known. He had actually been an executive director of the Democratic Party, early when he was a young man, had been a successful business person, had been on the board of trustees at UNH. And in fact, Governor Benson had reappointed him to lead the USNH board. And, Democrats were casting about. And if you look back farther than 2004, you look back to 2002, and that was a huge year for Republicans. They won across the board in New Hampshire and as well as nationally. And, Gene Sheehan lost to John Sununu in the U.S. Senate race. It was a real bloodbath in the governor's race where you had Craig Benson, who spent millions and millions of dollars after a competitive Republican primary against Mark Fernald, who supported an income tax. Democrats were casting about. And, Governor Lynch got in the race relatively late, basically running on, I want to restore integrity to the corner office, running on essentially against the scandals under Craig Benson. And, there were fractious times at the Statehouse where Republicans weren't getting along with Governor Benson either. And, his timing was good. You had the overhang of the phone jamming lawsuit, which made Republican donors leery. You had, infighting between Benson and leading Republicans. And then you had issues surrounding then House Speaker Gene Chandler's fundraising and the corn roast stuff. And so, Governor Lynch's timing was good. And, he narrowly won in 2004. We were there. It was late at night when they finally announced it. And, Craig Benson could have easily won that reelection. It was very close. And, Governor Lynch spent a bunch of his own money. And ran an effective campaign. It's really been the only competitive race he's had to run.
Yeah, since then he's won by 70% or something like that. So 2002, Josh, a really tough year for Democrats. Dean Spiliotis, 2004 rolls around, and as Josh so nicely outlined for us, Democrats see some opportunity, and John Lynch seizes that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. By 2004, I believe that at the presidential level, John Kerry wins New Hampshire, and we start to see these trends over the first few years of the 2000s, in which the state is starting to trend a little bit more Democratic. Democratic voter registrations are coming up a little bit. Lynch has governed in his first 2 years in pretty stark contrast to some of the some of the controversies of the Benson administration. He also, we heard in the opening clip, he talked a bit about bipartisanship. You know, his initial approach really had a lot of the same sort of feel as kind of Gene Shaheen's early time in the governor's office, in which for a Democratic governor, it was a virtue to be able to reach across the aisle. You really needed to be able to reach across the aisle and work with Republicans. It's sort of the kind of more traditional, I like to think of as kind of the Bill Clinton, Gene Shaheen, Democratic Leadership Council mode. You know, Lynch has never really been identified as a progressive in the Barack Obama mold. In fact, we saw in the 2008 election, there was a lot of attention in the Democratic Party between kind of the progressive wing and sort of the Lynch, more traditional moderate wing. But in the end, especially in 2010, they were happy to get behind him because at least they thought he had a chance of winning. And as we know, 10 was a bad year for Democrats. So absolutely, by 2004, the landscape for Democrats is starting to change. Kerry does well, and Lynch has had a pretty good first 2 years.
And Lynch, Kevin, as I remember in that race, kind of positioned himself as the anti-Benson, you know, where Benson could be prickly in public situations. Lynch was Mr. Congeniality. Where Benson's administration had some ethical challenges, Lynch seemed squeaky clean.
He did. I mean, what was interesting about that race to me was it wasn't about John Lynch. It was about Craig Benson. And that's what made John Lynch the perfect candidate. As Josh pointed out at the opening, the Democrats were kind of thrashing around for the right candidate. John Lynch was perfect. Why? Because he had no voting record. He'd never served in public office, so there was no record on which to attack him. Two, he was a business executive. I mean, that was Craig Benson's calling card as a successful businessman. But as we know, kind of a cowboy entrepreneur. John Lynch's style was so different, as he talked about on the program yesterday when he ran Knoll and turned that company around. As he turned many companies around, he did it really in a very cohesive, consensus-building way. And that was the kind of governor that people wanted to move to from Benson, where with all the drama, all the controversy. I mean, as Craig Benson said last night, what's his biggest regret being governor was not serving long enough. And I think the only one who could have beaten him in a year like that was John Lynch, because as Dean points out, and I think it's very important here, I don't think John Lynch wins in 2002. I think John Lynch got the lift from John Kerry that helped put him over the top. I think the Democratic turnout was significant there. And as Dean pointed out, started a trend of presidential years trending more Democratic here, as we saw again just on November 6th. And I think that really helped John Lynch the
wow,
first time.
Like that old cliche, Kevin, right? Timing in politics is everything. Dean, real quick?
Yeah, just real quick, just to clarify the chronology there. The 04 was the time when Kerry wins a state and we start to see the trend towards the Democrats. 06 is Lynch has had his first 2 years. We have people coming off of the sort of the Howard Dean-Deaniac rise of the progressives, and that's when you start to see the split of the party going into 08.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We're talking today about the Lynch legacy, looking back at the governor's 8 years in office. Less than a month from now, we'll have a new governor in the corner office. Today, we're spending some time looking at some of Lynch's major victories and some of his challenges. Also, over time, his influence on our state. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Josh, back to you. A criticism of Governor Lynch over the years, loudly from Republicans, sometimes quietly from Democrats, was that Governor Lynch maintained these super high popularity ratings because he didn't stick his neck out. Fair or not?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you perceive to be the role of the governorship. And I think that one thing that Governor Lynch has made clear in his time in office, and it's something he tends to stress in State of the State speeches and budget speeches, that he believes that, you know, New Hampshire has hit upon an approach, you know, no income tax, no sales tax, you know, incremental, you know, tinkering, sort of public-private partnerships, you know, incremental change. Don't mess up a good thing, in short, is what he always says. And I think that, you know, in some sense, you know, it's true that it's you know, building on what Gene Shaheen did as governor. And, you know, after 6 years of her and 8 years of Governor Lynch, I think you can fairly say that it is at a minimum a successful approach to winning re-election. You know, whether or not it stands a state in great stead, you know, over the long haul remains to be seen. But I do think it shows, you know, some insight into the electorate. And that, You know, with few exceptions, you know, New Hampshire governors who have been popular have not been, you know, kind of table thumping ideologues or, you know, people, you know, like Governor Benson. He came in and said, I'm going to be a change agent. I want to change the culture of government in New Hampshire. And I want to, you know, lead the state in a different manner. You know, by and large, there's little indication to suggest that that's what the electorate wants.
Yeah, although, Kevin, I imagine as a reporter, it's very frustrating sometimes. You know, there's these huge issues boiling at the State House. You know, everyone's talking about gay marriage or gambling or medical marijuana or whatever the issue may be. And, you know, people want to hear from the state's chief executive, but Lynch only speaks when he wants to speak. And that led to some of the criticism of, you know, lead us, Governor.
Sure, it did. And I think and it was frustrating for us as reporters. I mean, we would spend months trying to get Governor Lynch to comment on a bill, a raging controversy that was happening in Concord that had all of our attention. And it had his attention. He just wasn't ready to comment again. As you said, the state's chief executive. That's how we saw the role, really. And he talked a little bit yesterday during your fine interview with him on Tuesday about there are similarities between being a chief executive of a company and being chief executive of the state of New Hampshire. And I think one of the similarities for John Lynch essentially was, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to let the managers manage and I'm going to let the legislators legislate. And I'm going to make the executive decisions at the end of the day. And they're not going to come quickly, and they're not going to come without a lot of forethought. And certainly we can see that this governor put a lot of thought into a lot of the controversies of the day. And it's one of the reasons why at the end of the day, if he didn't surprise us a bit, he moved. And as you talked about on gay marriage, I did not believe at the beginning of that legislative battle that John Lynch would come to where he came, which was to sign it on expanded gambling. He had a commission that essentially said expanded gambling could work if it's limited and controlled and very heavily regulated. But at the end of the day, he disagreed with his commission.
All right. Well, after a short break, we'll tackle some of those topics, gay marriage, gambling, and a lot more. We'll also hear from state lawmakers about their experiences working with John Lynch. We'd love to hear from you, too. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on the Lynch legacy coming up on The Exchange at 10 o'clock. It's the Diane Rehm Show. New Hampshire weather today becoming partly to mostly sunny. Some leftover clouds will stay from the White Mountains north, turning breezy. Temperatures dropping into the 40s in most of the state. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Fenton Family Dealerships, Toyota, Volvo, Honda, Subaru, and Hyundai of Keene. Treating the needs of each individual customer with singular concern. FentonDealerships.com. From the UNH Next Level Executive Development Program, preparing individuals for new senior leadership roles. More at the UNH Whittemore School's Executive Development Program's website. And from New Hampshire Humanities Council, sponsoring a showing of Ken Burns' film, The Central Park Five, in a post-film discussion with Burns at Red River Theaters on December 17th. RedRiverTheaters.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Granite Staters reflect on the Lynch legacy as he prepares to step down after 8 years in the corner office. We invite you to join us. How do you think Governor Lynch has shaped our state? How do you think he'll be remembered? Over the years, did you have disappointments with the governor where you had hoped he would do more? And what do you see as the governor's biggest achievements? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We go now to Sylvia Larson. She is a Democrat from Concord and the Senate's minority leader, former Senate president. Senator Larson, thanks for being with us.
Wonderful to be here. Good morning.
Well, I want to talk to you first just as a Democrat. What political lessons do you think New Hampshire Democrats learned from Governor Lynch?
Well, I think the message of operating from the center, of trying our best to find fiscal responsibility while meeting the social needs of this state, I think that balance is what Governor Lynch was able to achieve. as well as just being such a warm and caring human being that people responded to across the state.
So Democrats learned to operate from the center, to not be pulled to one side or the other.
Exactly.
Were you ever frustrated with the governor, Senator Larson, wishing that he'd spoken out on an issue that, you know, Senate Democrats were promoting hard?
Well, yes, because he was not ever a legislator, there were times when we wanted him to understand the pressures and to recognize that it would help us if he had occasionally spoken out earlier on his position on things. But he tended to wait and listen and weigh all the topics and considerations. And so there were times when we wanted to see more kind of proactive behavior. And he was much more of a cautious centrist who, as I say, listened and waited and made his decisions when it was right for his timing.
Can you give us some examples, Senator Larson, of those times that you mentioned?
Well, we worked really hard a number of years back, of course, on the marriage equality bill, and that took him time. Certainly the issue of gaming was one which, you know, sometimes would be moving along, and there wasn't always, in those earlier years, there wasn't a clear message in terms of his position and what he would do. So those are a couple examples, but then you see his leadership on issues of, say, the dropout rate and the incredible progress we've made to increasing our high school graduation because of his leadership. Many, many other topics where he did take the lead, and it was one which he was successful at.
And it's interesting you talk about gambling, Senator Larson. I've sat down with the governor many times and tried to get some clarity on his position on gambling, and he would always say, I need to be convinced that it wouldn't hurt New Hampshire's quality of life. Yesterday, though, he gave a full-throated, spirited argument against expanded gambling for a number of reasons, from crime to political influence and so forth. How much do you think that message, that outgoing message from the governor yesterday, will resonate with Senate Democrats when you look at expanded gambling again in the new year?
Well, I think the caution he's urging is wise. I think, as his commission recommended, it's important to, if there were to be approved gaming sites in New Hampshire, that it would be incredibly important to put severe limits on it, to recognize that there may have to be geographic limits as well as authorization and contracts and whatever. So I think his message is one of caution again, and one which people will certainly approach, I believe, with that same sense of caution. And he's perhaps more cautious on it than some, but I tend to be on his side that it's if it were to be approved, it needs to be regulated in such a way that we as a state have our own controls over it.
Okay. Well, Senator Larson, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Great to talk to you, and all the best.
Thanks. That's Sylvia Larson, a Democrat from Concord and the Senate's minority leader. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest, as we look at Governor Lynch's legacy, is Dean Spiliotis, Kevin Landrigan, Josh Rogers. That's our roundtable here in studio. And gentlemen, since gambling keeps coming up, I want to play a little bit of what Governor Lynch said yesterday on gambling and then get your thoughts.
Our brand as a state will change. Connecticut, they don't even spend money on marketing anymore because their brand is determined by Foxwoods. And I don't think that's the kind of state we want to be. We want to be a state where we control the brand, not somebody else does. We also don't have any regulatory agency in place. So I think it's a bad idea.
Dean Spiliotis, again, overall, this is the first time I've really heard Governor Lynch give his thoughts in great detail on why he opposes gambling.
Yeah, that was very interesting to hear him come out with such a full-throated attack of the idea of having expanded gambling in New Hampshire. It was interesting listening to Sylvia Larson talk about his cautiousness, and he is someone who, from a decision-making perspective, does keep his cards very close to his vest, something that's not unusual for chief executives. I think it ties into his sort of kind of non-ideological nature and some of the earlier comments that Kevin made about his corporate management style. But it's funny because throughout his administration, I always heard him talk about needing to be convinced about the merits of casino gambling, needing to be convinced about the merits of medical marijuana, that it was doable from a regulatory perspective, that it wouldn't have negative impacts on the brand, as he said. But on those two issues, I never really felt that he was convincible, even though he had this sort of cautiousness, and we'll see. I think gay marriage was a little bit of a surprise for people to see how he moved on that. But for some reason, over that 8-year period, whenever he talked about medical marijuana or casino gambling and needing to be convinced, I never really felt that he was convincible. So hearing him say that the other day to you was not that big of a surprise to me.
What'd you think, Josh?
Well, I thought it was interesting. It was certainly more full-throated than like what we're accustomed to. I guess I would tend to agree with Dean that I never saw him as any, you know, prime prospect for, you know, being a real kind of casino cheerleader. The one thing that is interesting to remember, though, is that, you know, he was willing to explore other kinds of sort of gambling out of sight. I mean, certainly we have, you know, he presided over the expansion of charitable gaming. And he, you know, explored at some length the idea of, you know, expanding online gambling opportunities for the state. So I think a lot of when he talks about the brand, it's like, if I don't have to see it, then maybe it's something that, you know, people in New Hampshire could live with. He didn't ultimately do that, but he spent a lot of time in you know, a couple budget cycles ago looking at ways to potentially boost revenues through, you know, online gambling.
Oh, see, I didn't know that, Josh. That's interesting. Well, and Senator Larson also mentioned the same-sex marriage bill. And yesterday, Governor Lynch told us that his thinking on this issue, as he put it, evolved over his time in office.
I've had so many people come up to me thanking me for what we did with regard to gay marriage.
Really?
So many people, because it's provided it's made their lives better. They're happier. They're no longer thought of as second-class citizens. It's really made, for them, a real opportunity in their lives. I've not had one person come up to me and say, because of that law, it's negatively impacted their own marriage. Not one. So I think it's here. I think it should remain in place in New Hampshire. And I think the people of New Hampshire accept it. And it's time to move on.
Kevin Landrigan, Governor Lynch, when he first ran for office, said he thought marriage should be between a man and a woman. So that's a pretty big evolution, as he put it.
It sure was. And it surprised us, to be sure. And I think given his religious upbringing, his sister's a nun, there was a lot of thought that that he felt that civil unions was the appropriate solution. And he got pretty solidly behind that approach. And as he talked about on Tuesday, he kind of confessed that initially he thought we may be moving too fast. What's so uncharacteristic about this is that he is a national leader. I mean, he's the first governor to sign a same-sex marriage law, and he'll always be remembered for that. And I think now fully appreciates what a significant achievement and accomplishment that was, much like what he talked about expanding kindergarten, just to mold those issues for a moment to make this point. As he said, he got behind both expanding kindergarten and lowering the dropout rate, and many people in the school system, principals, teachers, school board members, were most reticent about it, and they became the greatest cheerleaders for it because they realized this really works and there's no harm in it. And I think Governor Lynch has become similarly committed and convinced, hey, this is a real big thing that I did, and it was the right thing to do.
And, I mean, it was interesting to hear Senator Larson talk about the frustration that Senate Democrats felt at the time because, you know, even when Governor Lynch signed civil unions, that was a pretty big deal. I mean, we didn't know what he was going to do. He, you know, managed to announce that he was going to sign it, you know, in Pembroke at a fire station. It was just very odd.
Is it civil unions or gay marriage?
Civil unions. Yeah. It was also the governor's going to have a press availability. This is in the wake of a flood, and he was touring damage. And he was just like, okay, there's going to be a press availability at the fire station in Pembroke. So we all haul out there. And
thought it was going to be about the floods, probably.
Well, I mean, it was very kind of rather tensely, you know, essentially read a statement about, you know, why he felt civil unions was fine. And then I think he thought it was going to be, this issue was going to sort of be off his plate for the time being. And then You know, Democrats moved on this, you know, into his headwinds, frankly, like the next session. And, you know, it got through the House. The Senate was a little leery. The Senate, you know, the committee initially voted it down. You know, Governor-elect Maggie Hassan was actually crucial in keeping this going. And this is a big, you know, this is a big accomplishment for her, too, in terms of brokering something that, you know, they would say would did a better job of preserving religious liberties. And, you know, I think that ultimately the legislation you know, will be seen as sort of a model accomplishment. And it was interesting. I mean, one thing that was interesting yesterday when the governor was, you know, railing against out-of-state money that flooded the state on this issue, well, you know, he and the Democrats were beneficiaries of also a lot of out-of-state money. And the governor himself actually traveled to Chicago in order to speak, you know, at an event run by sort of same-sex marriage advocates. And, you know, he was the headline attraction at essentially a gay marriage fundraiser, which I don't think any of us would have foreseen, and is interesting. And it's too bad there's no footage of that exists, actually. It would be interesting to watch.
Well, and Josh, so real quick, he announced civil unions, his support for civil unions at this sort of seemingly small press event at a fire station in Pembroke.
And when he did gay marriage, it was interesting because he you know, called us in and said, you know, I've made it clear to the Senate that there has to be these changes. And they had to, you know, rework the bill at the 11th hour. And then when he signed, you know, same-sex marriage, it was, you know, a big, you know, press event in the office. You know, Bishop Gene Robinson is, you know, there on one side of him. Jim Splaine, who, you know, shepherded the bill through on the other. And do think historically, to Kevin's point, you know, if you had to say what is the signal accomplishment of John Lynch's time in office, I mean, I think, you know, historically, you'd have to say same-sex marriage.
So he made a big deal out of it when he signed the same-sex marriage bill,
yes.
Unlike kind of skirting it almost for the civil unions. Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, joining us now is another voice from the New Hampshire legislature. Peter Bragdon is on the line. He's a Republican from Milford and the Senate's president. And Senator Bragdon, good to have you, too. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura. Good to be here.
Well, from that Republican standpoint, Senator Bragdon, what was it like to work with Governor Lynch?
Well, I think it was a very good relationship that we had with the governor. You know, he approached things from a pretty businesslike approach, and that was, you know, certainly something that I appreciated. So, in my 2 years as president, I enjoyed the relationship that I had working with Governor Lynch. And then 2 years prior to that as minority leader, it was a little less involved, but still he would pop in my office and we discussed various things from time to time.
What more do you wish, Senator Bragdon, that Governor Lynch had done? He had so much political capital in that bank, so to speak. Where could he perhaps have spent some of that famous political capital?
Well, I'm not sure if I can think of specific areas to spend it. I do agree with those who see his style as kind of more laid back and not out front. So you didn't see him in front of a lot of issues. But, you know, he's a pragmatic guy, and I'm kind of like that myself, I guess, so I can appreciate that part of it. You know, there was criticism this past term on the education funding amendment. But, you know, from our vantage point in the Senate, we saw a number of different things going on there, and I'm not sure I could have recommended a particular path for the governor to take that wasn't going to lead to trouble without some groundwork being laid in advance.
Yeah, you know, that was interesting. We talked to him about it yesterday, the education funding amendment. Everybody said, as you remember, Senator Bragdon, that this was going to be the year. We had you on board. We had Governor Lynch on board. We had House Speaker Bill O'Brien on board, and still it didn't go down. Governor Lynch yesterday kind of said that's the way it's gone for a lot of these amendments. He didn't really seem to want to take the rap that he didn't bring along enough of his fellow Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there weren't a lot of Democrats on board, but, you know, there's some reasons behind all that as well, and I guess I wouldn't lay them all at his feet.
On what issues, Senator Bragdon, do you feel that Republicans worked best with the governor? I mean, some people say they can't even remember if Lynch was really a Republican or a Democrat because he achieved this bipartisan mole here.
Yeah, well, certainly on issues relating to businesses and even within efficiencies, Senator Sanborn had brought in a bill for a commission to study ways that businesses can, the state government can operate more like a business in its transaction side. And the governor heard about that and met with Senator Sanborn and adopted that as part of his budget plan. So, you know, there were things that were beneficial to the business community that the governor was very supportive of. Of course, we had our differences on some of the other things, the various taxes and fees that came in. But there were areas where there was definitely some bipartisan agreement.
Yeah, so we had our differences. You mentioned taxes and fees. Other key differences, Senator Bragdon, that you're hoping you will not have with the governor-elect, Maggie Hassan?
Well, I've worked with Senator Hassan as well, and I think we get along very well. I think it's going to be the critical issue, at least in this first session, is the budget. And, Governor Lynch, at one point, the budget 4 years ago, helped push through a budget that had numerous tax and fee increases, the LLC tax and some very unpopular taxes, the campground tax, and Senator Hassan was involved in that. So we're certainly trying to make sure that those types of things don't happen again.
All right, Peter Bragdon, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Peter Bragdon, Republican from Milford and the President of the Senate. The number for you to join us as we look back at the legacy of New Hampshire Governor John Lynch is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And Dean Spiliotis, Kevin Landrigan, Josh Rogers, Senator Bragdon got us into an area where I wanted to go anyway, so let's go there. Sometimes Governor Lynch's Teflon, Dean Spiliotis, did get sticky, and some of those tax and fee increases were the reason.
Right, absolutely. And, tax and fees are always unpopular in the state. As we saw in this last election with Maggie Hassan taking the pledge, I think one of the smart things that John Lynch did in terms of his electability and kind of positioning himself as a centrist in the state was taking the pledge. But there's no doubt that a number of the taxes and fees are always unpopular. Whether we're talking about licensing fees or park fees or what have you, certainly there were some times where people were unhappy with what he put in the budget.
And I wonder, Kevin Landrigan, how much some of those taxes and fees helped lead to that Republican sweep in 2010 that we saw.
Oh, there's no question about it. I think that, as he pointed out during his interview, without a broad-based tax and with what many see as a structural deficit over the last 10 years, meaning that structurally, without bailouts or federal reimbursement schemes or whatever, we spend more than we take in. So when you had business tax revenues coming in 2010, like they had come in 2005, and your government is $200-300 million bigger than that, you're scrambling. And Governor Lynch, at the end of that budget in 2009, with the Democrats in control and Maggie Hassan, the Senate Majority Leader, were scrambling. And at the end of the day, they came up with some very sketchy ideas that not only turned out to be unpopular, but really unworkable. I mean, the LLC tax was, strictly from a technical point of view, was an absolute disaster. The campground tax was not only very unpopular, it didn't raise much money. This new 10% tax on gambling winnings was an abomination for our Powerball earnings in lottery.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about that after a short break. And take your calls at 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and the Monshire Museum of Science in Norwich, Vermont, featuring two exhibitions exploring the art of Charlie Hopper, including work from the Center for Cartoon Studies, monshire.org, open daily 10 to 5. And Granite Investment Advisors introducing a locally managed mutual fund option for long-term value investors. More information available at 888-442-9893. It's 940. This is NHPR.
NHPR is celebrating 12 days of drawings with a bunch of great prizes, culminating with two iPad minis during our short winter fundraiser. We revealed a new prize today and we'll reveal another new one tomorrow, so the sooner you make your gift, the more of these drawings you'll be entered in to win. Support your statewide news service with a $100 membership gift now at nhpr.org. And thanks.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the intense debate in the Green Mountain State over relicensing the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. Email us your questions before the show at exchange@nhpr.org, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the Lynch legacy as Governor Lynch prepares to step down after 8 years in New Hampshire's corner office. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. How do you think Governor Lynch has shaped our state? How do you think he'll be remembered? Over the years, what were your disappointments with the governor and his policies? And what do you see as his most important achievements? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. And Kevin Landrigan, Josh Rogers, Dean Spiliotis, we were talking before with Peter Bragdon, Senate President, about Governor Lynch's moves on education funding. Let's hear what he said yesterday in our interview about his attempt to get an amendment to the New Hampshire Constitution changing the way the state helps pay for local public schools.
The amendment I wanted was an amendment that affirmed the state's responsibility for public education, but allowed the state to send more money to the communities and children who need it more than others. It's the only way I know of ensuring that every child in New Hampshire has the opportunity to get a quality education, regardless of where he or she lives or their income level. So that's what I supported.
And Josh Rogers, we talked yesterday and earlier this morning about how, boy, if there were ever a year to get an education funding amendment through, this would have been the year, but it didn't happen.
Well, I mean, in theories, I mean, there are oftentimes, yes, the numbers were there on paper. It's always the year to get an education funding amendment through, except it's never the year to get an education amendment.
That's a really good
through.
Way to put it, actually.
You know, there are differences of opinion on obviously the language of any of these amendments, what they mean. There've been, I don't know how many, I've lost track of how many have been proposed. And, you know, people can quibble with the governor's gloss on what his own amendment did. And when he says, what I want to do is I want to make sure that every child gets an adequate education and that we can target money to needier communities, you can already do that under the Claremont rulings. You just need to fund adequacy for every child first. It's a matter of, you know, arithmetic and raising the money to do so, or, you know, change the Constitution to give lawmakers a freer hand where they send money. Senate President Bragdon was, you know, subtly indicating that the problems really lay with fractious relations between, you know, within the House Republican caucus and between, you know, the Speaker and Governor Lynch. And it is true that not a single Democrat voted for what was allegedly the governor's amendment, but he didn't really push it, and they weren't really interested in voting for it.
And that was the accusation that House Speaker Bill O'Brien made, that it would have passed if Lynch hadn't pushed harder. I asked him about that yesterday, and he kind of said, no, not really. But you're saying not a single Democrat voted for that.
No, I don't believe.
No, it's true. And I think it's one of the reasons why, just to move to Governor-elect Maggie Hassan for a moment, I think she's moving on. I mean, I certainly heard during the campaign no great enthusiasm for pushing an education funding amendment, which we should start out with, would be very unpopular with the new majority Democratic caucus in the House. There is no question about it. Why? Because many of them suspect that, to Josh's point, if you can already target now, if Republicans regain control of the legislature, then there'll no longer be an adequate education amount in every community. So, yes, Berlin, Allenstown, Franklin, Pittsfield, all of those communities should get more money, but it would mean other communities would get a lot less if Republicans were in control, and that's why Democrats are dead set against it and why I don't believe this new governor is going to be a big cheerleader for it.
Our phone number again here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, and Brian posted a comment on The Exchange's Facebook page. He says, Lynch's legacy will be the success of future governors who follow his model, which is what we anticipate and expect from Maggie Hassan, and therefore the reason she was overwhelmingly elected. Dean Spiliotis, you're our political analyst. What do you think about Brian's comment? He's the one, again, who said that future successful governors are going to model themselves after Governor Lynch. That's why Maggie Hassan won.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we saw very self-consciously that Maggie Hassan made an effort to do just that. You know, I've said a number of times in the past that John Lynch has been an amazing non-politician, and so it's not simply the case that he's bipartisan in the sense that, you know, this Democratic agenda and this Republican agenda, and he figures out how to bridge the gap. I mean, he's almost post-partisan in a sense. If you listen to the sort of non-ideological language that he typically uses, yet he gets things done that in the past have actually had, have been fairly ideologically divisive. If you think about gay marriage for an example, and how politically divisive that has been around the country between conservatives and liberals, yet he did it it in a way that was sort of thoughtful, and he took his time coming around to it. But in a way that was sort of wasn't quite as ideological or as partisan as it could have been. So, absolutely, I think particularly in the state, he's a good model for how kind of a chief executive can transcend the sorts of partisanship that gets you bogged down in the legislature.
Well, and here's another political question for you, Dean. And I think Sylvia Larson said this too, Senator Larson, the Democrat from Concord. Okay, so the Lynch model for Democrats is don't go too far to the left, don't be too partisan. Is there a lesson for Republicans in the Lynch style that, again, you know, like it or not, served him quite successfully?
Yeah, in theory, yes. I mean, that's always a function of kind of the internal tensions in the party. And, you know, it's not clear to me from even just sort of listening to, you know, we're having this election for state party chair, either Jennifer Horne or Andrew Hemingway, who are both consider themselves, you know, fairly strong conservatives. You don't necessarily hear that that's kind of the direction that they want to move in. I think one of the reactions you typically get from conservatives after a loss is that, well, the conservative message was not clearly enough stated for whatever reason. I think there's certainly an opportunity there. We haven't seen it traditionally among Republicans. I mean, Ovid LaMontagne tried it to some extent on the economy, but again, got sort of pinned down on the conservative social agenda. So, sure, it's a possibility. I haven't heard anything about the potential from the incoming party chairs on the Republican side to suggest that that's where they're headed.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks for that comment. And you can also join us by phone, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We talked earlier, folks, about gay marriage and gambling. Another issue where Governor Lynch pushed back was the legalization of marijuana for medical purposes. He said yesterday, Kevin, mainly because of concerns over the clash between federal and state laws, also because these systems elsewhere, as he said, have gotten out of control. He said in Montana, where supposedly medical marijuana was bought and sold on the ski slopes, which was something I hadn't heard before. But how much is this going to change here in New Hampshire now, Kevin, since we have an incoming governor who says at least she's open to medical marijuana?
Yeah, it could be the biggest change I think we see in passing the torch from John Lynch to Maggie Hassan. But it won't come without a lot of effort and perspiration. There's no question about it. As Governor Lynch pointed out, law enforcement is dead set against this. And this is a new governor who wants to curry favor with law enforcement. So I think she certainly she supports the concept. She has voted for the bill before in the past. But the bill will need some further work in terms of the distribution system and managing access to medical marijuana and trying to control who gets it and how they get it. I think it's possible, and that's certainly the first time I've ever even had that notion here in New Hampshire that medical marijuana would be possible.
Yeah, and there have been lots of votes, Josh, on this over the past few years.
Votes when Democrats were in control of the legislature and Republicans were in control of the legislature, and I was unaware of any other state where actually a Republican-dominated legislature had passed it to have it vetoed by a Democratic governor. And so how Maggie Hassan handles this I think will be fairly interesting to watch. To Kevin's point, you know, if she's going to run in the Lynch model, then, you know, being tight with law enforcement is going to be a big part of that. And you know, there are, you know, it'll be interesting to see what kind of model. I mean, when the bills have come before, they've always been tailored to try to meet Governor Lynch's reservations about the policy.
But you see, I mean, this is another one of those issues like gay marriage where it's just moving really quickly nationally. You look at some of the changes in the marijuana laws in Colorado and out west and medical marijuana as well in other states, and you feel like this is one of those issues where we probably are finally going to see something, I think.
So as we talked about with Governor Lynch, Josh, kind of unbelievably to a lot of people, actually his biggest legacy could be this gay marriage bill. Maybe Maggie Hassan's will be medical marijuana. We don't know.
There's a lot, you know, she's got at least 2 years.
So. Yeah, at least two. And most governors do get reelected. You know, I want to ask you, Dean, about something else that doesn't have anything to do with policy or bills or political wrangling. And that's the large number of natural disasters that happened under Governor Lynch's 8 years in office. It seemed like, you know, every 6 months there was a 500-year flood.
And I'm sure you'll do another show or probably already have done a show about the climate change debate. But yeah, this is one of the first things I always point to when people ask me about Lynch's success. history is littered with governors and mayors and other politicians who have who've handled national disasters poorly. And I always say about John Lynch is he really knows how to wear the windbreaker. You know, anytime you turn on TV and there's a major fire or a flood, he's there with a windbreaker, you know, talking to people, kind of saying that the state government's on top of it. We saw the importance to Chris Christie just recently in Hurricane Sandy. He's walking around with Obama and he had his fleece jacket on that said Governor Christie. His popularity in the state has soared. It's upwards of 70% now in New Jersey. So you can't underestimate the ability, the necessity of chief executives in states to handle these natural disasters. And he's done it with kind of efficiency and compassion. And I think they even pushed someone out of a snowbank last winter or the winter before when they were stuck on the side of the road with the security detail.
That's
so,
right.
So
it's
a pretty
that.
Helpful governor, right? And I think it's a good model. I'm sure that Maggie Hassan is being fitted for her windbreaker and fleece as we speak.
Kevin, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I just
people appreciate that.
They really do. And I
Lynch's
think,
opponents kind of made fun of it. They called him Governor Flood.
It's
but
important.
It's very important. As Dean said, it really it has a lot to do with building the persona of the person in the job. I thought the most interesting thing Governor Lynch said, which I found ironic on Tuesday, was, I think we should all be measured in terms of results, not style. Well, actually, this governor is probably the most popular in New Hampshire history precisely because of style, not results. You'd probably give this guy a B, probably a B plus. But on style, he gets an A plus plus. And for the very reason why he talked about what are my two greatest accomplishments, bringing people together and being accessible. That's what he does during disasters. He's the chief healer of the state of New Hampshire. And it really allowed him to show a lot of his personality, which is very friendly, very outgoing with new people. He's very good at meeting new people and establishing warmth with those new associations. And you have to do that in disasters. You walk into cataclysmic events and people's homes that have been utterly destroyed, and you have to find a way to calm them. And Lynch was masterful at that.
Let's take a call, gentlemen. This is Martin in Concord. Hi, Martin. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. I've been listening with interest to the analysis of Governor Lynch's terms in office. And there's been some puzzlement, head-scratching events about his attitude toward gay marriage and a few other things, and some expressions of impatience with his supposed lack of being forward on certain issues. Well, I compare John Lynch's attitude to a situation in which you're on a beach and you drill down through the sand and then you hit bedrock. And he's got some bedrock values that I think account for some of the things that he's done. And one of those bedrock values is equality and equality of opportunity. That's why he's pursued what he's done with respect to school funding. And that's why he did what he did when it came to same-sex marriage. He, I think, firmly believed that the principle of equality of opportunity to get married was one of the things that he took into deep consideration. And yes, indeed, I'm sure he went through a whole lot of soul searching, but that's what I think was driving him.
Okay. Martin, thanks a lot for the call. Dean, what do you think?
Absolutely true. You know, I think we've always had a sense that he does have a core set of values, but he doesn't really wear them on his sleeve. There's kind of a sort of a New England style to that, kind of sort of maybe keeping it a little closer to the vest. And as a result, you sort of have to kind of almost infer kind of it's a nice analogy, where the sort of bedrock is located in terms of his values. But I think he has been pretty consistent over the course of the 8 years. But absolutely, he's never struck me, even though he is kind of moderate and centrist, you know, he doesn't strike me as someone who's kind of purely instrumental or pragmatic. There is a sort of core set of values, but they're not necessarily right at the surface. And as we've discussed today, sometimes it takes a little while before you kind of figure in. You know, on the medical marijuana and on gambling, it was always, as Josh and I both said, it was always clear to us that it wasn't going to happen. The gay marriage was a little bit of a surprise, but again, if you talk about equality of opportunity and equality, it was there down below the surface.
Well, and maybe, Dean, that says something not just about Governor Lynch, but also about our culture today. It's an instant culture. you know, here's a bill. Where do you stand? Yeah. Well, I need to think about it. No. Where do you stand?
Right. Absolutely.
And we want it right now.
Right. And it gets back to my earlier comments about that he really is a non-politician politician, kind of sort of in an old school mode where you don't get this kind of instantaneous, visceral response that typically you get from ideologues on the left and right. And I think a lot of people in the state found that refreshing as a result. And I think Kevin's comments about style versus outcome is dead on. I think that his kind of temperament as a chief executive is really what made him so remarkably successful. When you look at the WMUR polls over the course of the 8 years, it's just remarkable. Typically, governors who are in that long really start to taper off towards the end of their third or fourth term.
Yeah, and you know, our caller Martin mentioned some head scratching among us here in the studio. I know Andy Smith over at the UNH Survey Center has been scratching his head for a long time going, wow, these polls just don't change. Josh Rogers, final thoughts from you.
Well, I mean, I guess to the point that Dean was making, I do think that one thing that is a real gift that John Lynch has that I think is rare in politicians is that he doesn't provoke visceral responses in people, you know, across the spectrum. Very few people are going to meet him and have a visceral dislike for him. That has obviously stood him in good stead. And to Martin's point on the whole bedrock front, I do think it's worth noting that, you know, the governor takes a long time to make up his mind. But in terms of particularly if you look at some of his decisions when there have been, you know, dodgy issues in the executive branch, you know, when he makes up his mind that somebody needs to go, for instance, like, you know, he's willing to go to the wall to get them to go. That hasn't worked every single time. But, you know, once he makes up his mind, it tends to stay made up, despite, you know, his movement on some of these issues.
And we've talked this hour, guys, about, you know, Governor Lynch as this postpartisan figure, as Dean Spiota said. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Josh? Do you think people see incoming governor-elect Maggie Hassan as a little more of a partisan figure, or is she, as she tried to say during the election, in the mold of John Lynch?
Well, I mean, she may aspire to be in the mold of John Lynch, and I guess we'll see. If you're the majority leader of a legislative body, it's hard to cast yourself as, you know, sort of postpartisan. I'm not sure she'd necessarily say she's that. It'll be interesting to see how she works this. I mean, she, you know, there were a lot of votes she took and, you know, sort of carrying the water of the party. And, you know, she had the good fortune of running in a climate of this election cycle and did a good job of, you know, casting her opponent over LaMontagne as extreme. And he had a track record that, you know, could make that argument a credible one.
Okay. Josh, thanks a lot for being here.
You're welcome.
Josh Rogers, State House reporter for NHPR. Kevin Landrigan, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Dean Spiliotis, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civics scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Knoy.